Summer Stories at 5:14. Thank you guys for being here. Folks watching online, thank you for watching. We really appreciate it. Let's talk about Summer Stories and what this means. So when we decided as a team that we were going to do this Summer Stories series and I found out that I was going to be one of the speakers, I knew exactly what Summer Story I was going to talk about. It was the summer of 1985. I know that seems like a long time ago. It was not. The summer of 1985 was the summer that I conquered my fear of roller coasters. So here's what happened. Sitting in Jersey Baptist Youth Group, they came in early in the summer and said, hey, at the end of summer, in August, we're going to, boom, Kings Island. Best news ever. We're like, yes! I'm sitting next to my buddy Danny White, and I'm like, dude, I'm going to ride the snot out of the Tilt-A-Whirl. If you don't know what the Tilt-A-Whirl is, it's a terrible ride. It just kind of spins and goes around. It's terrible. My buddy Danny's like, no, dude, we are going to ride the snot out of roller coasters. I'm like, yeah, wait, no, we are not. I had to break it to Danny that I do not ride roller coasters. I just don't do roller coasters. He's like, dude, you are going to do roller coasters. So all summer long, Danny planned this great idea to start off on the kiddie coaster. Me and him would start off riding the kiddie coaster and then work our way up to the biggest, baddest coaster ever, the Beast. And I know the Beast is not that scary now, but back then it was terrifying. And that's what we did. Man, it was so much fun. We started on the kiddie coaster and I wasn't scared. It was fine. Kiddie coaster, I wasn't scared at all. Moved up to something else. I don't remember what it was, but I was a little more nervous. And it was every time I got on a coaster, I was a little scared, but man, what a great summer. And I can remember riding the Beast for the first time, and I held on the whole time. But just thinking, this is amazing. I can't believe I've waited so long. So finally, we get off the Beast, and we have time to get on one more time. So we get on the Beast, and we're climbing the first hill. And Danny looks over at me, and he sees me holding on. He's like, dude, you can't hold on. I'm like, oh, I have to hold on. He's like, no, dude, don't hold on. So I'm like, all right. So I raised my hand just at the top of the hill. We went over. Fantastic. And all I could hear, like what I really remember from that last ride on the Beast was I remember hearing Danny yelling something. I couldn't hear it first. And if you've ever ridden the Beast, you know there's times when it gets a little quieter. And when it got to be a little quieter, I finally heard what Dan was doing. And he's going, we are the boys! We are the boys! We are the boys! I'm like, Danny, shut up. I don't know what you're saying, but you sound crazy right now. Please, he was just super excited, and that was a great, great summer. But then I thought, no, what about the following summer? What about the summer of 86 when I became the roller coaster tour guide? And I took my buddy Sean Platt through the same steps. We started off on the kiddie coaster, and we worked our way up to the Beast. And that's exactly what we did. And I can remember riding the Beast the second time I rode it, same thing. Sean's holding on like this as we're clicking up the hill. I'm like, Sean, dude, can't hold on. Lift your hands. Don't hold on. And he's like, no, I have to hold on. I'm like, Sean, don't hold on. So he's like, okay. And he just goes like this. And just opens his hands a little bit. I'm like, no, Sean. And we're still clicking. You know, it takes forever to get up that hill. I said, you got to raise your hands. Like, raise them like this. So he goes, all right. And he raises them like this. Just as we're getting to the top, I'm like, yeah, we are the boys. No idea why I yelled it. It just sounded like I was supposed to do it. It just came out. And we get to the top, and just before we go over, I look over this way to see how high we are. I'm like, dude, we are so high. And I look back at him, and he, while I looked this way, had worked one arm underneath the bar like this. This is him holding, the bar is here, and he's riding like this. I'm like, dude, just as we go over, I'm like, dude, this is not going to work. And what happened is when you get to the bottom of the hill, your body's still going down, you're flopped around, and no, because his arms are here, his face bounced off that bar for the rest of the ride. It was awesome. But then I thought, no, I got to talk about the summer of 91, the summer of concerts. So I went to a lot of concerts that year. I was big into hair bands, okay? So there was one concert that year. It was Warrant, Trickster, and Firehouse. Just to paint a picture, here's Warrant. There's Warrant. That's rock and roll right there. It was Warrant, Trickster was the second group, and then the opener was a band called Firehouse. So I went and saw this show in Indianapolis, and then I saw it in Pittsburgh, and then back to Kings Island, Timberwolf down there. Anybody know all three bands? Not you, Bryce. I know you're lying. There he is. Are you guys lying to me? Oh, you know them? Awesome. Anybody else? Round of applause if you know these bands. My people. That was a great show. But what happened when Mike and I went to Kings Island, when we got there, as soon as we walked through the gates, girls started noticing us. Girls, as we walked in, girls like, oh, as we're walking by. We're like, this is awesome. all day long. We got there early, and the concert was later in the day. All day long, we're signing stuff. They're taking pictures with us, and like this kind of picture, not selfies. Selfies didn't exist in the 80s, another reason why the 80s were so awesome. But they talked all day long. Girls just coming up and hi, and then leave. And Mike and I are like, this is incredible. I don't know what's going on, but this is incredible. So at one point, we get on the Eiffel Tower, and we go, as we get onto the elevator, some more girls jump on, and they're standing over there going, hee-hee-hee. So we get to the top of the elevator, and we get off, and we're walking around, and finally one of the girls comes up and says, hey, can you sign our King's Island map? I'm like, yeah, sure. So I go to sign, and as I'm signing, I'm like, who do you think we are? And she goes, well, you're P.J. Farley and Steve Brown from Trickster. And my buddy Mike goes, no. And I go, yes, we are. Let me sign that. and they ran off, and my buddy Mike's like, dude, what if we sit next to them at the Trickster show? I'm like, I did not think that far ahead. But you're like, well, how do you really look like P.J. Farley? I'll show you. Here's P.J. Farley, and that's what I looked like at the time. That's really me. It's not Photoshopped. So that's who they thought I was. They thought, enough with laughing. That was cool back then, I swear. You guys are like, he looks like an idiot. I'm not pointing to the idiot. I'm pointing to the high schoolers that I know are laughing at that. Who's covering their face? Is somebody covering their face over there like they're embarrassed by it? No? Okay. No, they're just judging me. That's cool. Whatever. So that's what I look like. And man, it was great. It was a great day. And then I thought, you know what? I need to talk about vacation and being with family, both like mom and dad and my sister on vacation, or I can talk about stories with my wife and kids. I got plenty of those stories. I can talk about, like John did last week, I can talk about being in the backyard playing sports with the neighborhood kids. I should do that. But then when I started thinking about the neighborhood kids, that got me thinking about the quote. You see, 6 months ago, my life changed. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, all right, your life changed over a quote? Sounds like a bit of an exaggeration, but I will tell you it is not an exaggeration. As a matter of fact, I have never exaggerated in my life, and I've probably spoken in front of a billion people and have never exaggerated. So what happened was, like I said, about 6 months ago, I'm sitting at the church office working on Twitter, and our own Fleur Shomo had retweeted a quote that just devastated me. That was my first interaction with the quote. 23 words strung together to form a thought and a message that nearly knocked me to the ground. A message so powerfully devastating that I haven't even told my wife yet. She's sitting out here, I think. Is she? Yeah, there she is. Was that her that said yeah? No, it wasn't even her that said yeah. She's not even gonna, she won't talk. She has not heard that. She knows of the quote, but she has not heard it yet. And I feel like I haven't told her, and she would tell you this, that I haven't told her this quote yet because I feel like I'm protecting her. I'm protecting her from a quote that really, really messed with me. It was devastatingly powerful, or it is devastatingly powerful. The last time something so seemingly innocent knocked me to the ground like this was 16 years ago. My 18-year-old was 2 at the time, Sebastian, and I was chasing him around the house. And he'd take off running, and he had a little plastic hammer in his hand, and he'd take off running all around the house. Well, at one point, we get to the front door, and this is how I know it's a summer story, because I can still feel the heat coming in from the front door. And I stand there, and I stop. He stops, and he looks at me, and I go, ah! And he just stands there like this, looking at me. I'm like, all right, what's going on here? So we're just staring at each other for what seemed like minutes, just staring at each other. I'm like, all right, I got to get him running again. I just need to growl a little louder. So I'm like, ah! And when I did that, that left all of this open. Let's talk biology for a minute. In the male anatomy, there is what I would call a kink in the armor. Two kinks, to be specific. Sebastian, seeing his opportunity, hauled off and got me right on the left kink. Knocked me to the ground. I went down like this. I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh, this is not good. I'm like, the room is spinning. This is not good. He, of course, thinks it's hilarious. He thinks daddy's playing with him. And I look up like this to tell him to says, please be easy. He takes that hammer and gets me right on the temple. Which I'm, so I'm like, oh. And I yelled. So I yelled to Tab in the other room. She has no idea what's going on. And it wasn't like a cute, like, hey, Tab, come save me. This boy's going to, he's getting his daddy. It was more like a, Tab, please come save me. This boy's going to kill me. She came running in there and I had to explain to her what happened, that my two-year-old took me down. We wrestled from time to time through the next few years, but I always learned to protect myself. The guys, that's life. That's life. You know, and I know I'm joking around about this this quote a little bit, but it really did absolutely devastate me. About 2 months ago, I'm coming home from a gig, and I get 5 minutes from the house, and I start thinking about this quote, and I started bawling. Not tearing up, not crying, I started bawling. It's that powerful. Are you guys ready to hear it? No, you guys are like, I don't know. First group this morning are like, no, we are done. We do not want to hear it. Well, I knew that when I heard this quote, I knew I was going to have to do a message about it, and I wasn't going to do a message about it, whether it was a church or at a corporate event. I wasn't going to do a message until I could find motivation in it. So here we go. Tab, are you ready? You've not seen this. Here we go. At some point in your childhood, you and your friends went outside to play for the very last time, and nobody knew it. I'm going to read it again. At some point in your childhood, you and your friends went outside to play for the very last time, and nobody knew it. I'm just going to shut up. It seems like forever, but it's be like 15 seconds. I'm going to let you read this. Just read it. So if you're like me, when I read this the first time, I immediately jumped back to the last time I played the backyard sports with my buddies. And I remembered the last time, but it wasn't really with the neighborhood kids. I was still living at home, but I had a 40-hour-a-week job, and I asked some of the guys that I work with, like, hey, dude, you want to come back to our house and play tennis ball, which was baseball with a tennis ball? And they did, which is weird that we were grown and playing. But I couldn't remember, like, the last time me and my neighborhood friends, like Chuck and Brett and Trevor and Jerry and Jay and Randy and David and Brian, I can't remember the last time we played together. But there was a last time, and nobody knew it. And that devastated me, but then I started making it way more personal. And I started thinking stuff like this. At some point, I walked out of Zantigo's for the very last time, and I didn't know it. Are there any Zantigo's people out there? Anybody remember Zantigo's? Couple of you. Zantigo's, it was Zantigo or Taco, Taco Bell. Zantigo destroyed Taco Bell. Nothing on the menu was over a dollar. Zantigo was awesome, and at some point I walked out for the very last time. Uh-oh, but there's an update. There is one, I found out. There's a Zantigo near the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport, like 20 minutes from there, I found out. So next time I fly in there, which seems to be quite often lately, I'm making sure my layover is long enough to go to that Zantigo. So the last time I walked into Zantigo may not have been for the very last time. I'll keep you updated. Here's what we did the next one. At some point, I said, talk to you later to some of my high school friends for the last time, and I didn't know it. Now, obviously, with Facebook and social media, it's a little different, but there are some that I said, we'll see you, man. I'll see you later. I'll talk to you later. It was the last time, and I didn't know it. And then it gets worse. At some point, Sebastian asked me to wrestle for the very last time, and I don't remember if I said yes or no. And that kills me. And he could ask me now, and I would say no because he's stronger than me, and it would be weird to wrestle with my 18-year-old, but that kills me. And I thought, how funny would it be if that was part of the message, like I bring him up here and we just wrestle in front of you. It's just me going, oh, no, wait, stop, you're hurting me. That's all it would be. But since I brought the room down, let's stay here for a minute. Let's stay depressed. Let's see what kind of depressing Bible verse I can find to go along with this. Here we go, James 4:14. You do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. That's harsh, James. That's messed up. Listen to this attitude. What is your life? Like, come on, dude. More like jerk 4:14. It's trying to make me feel bad. It doesn't matter. Like right now, it matters. But depending on where you are right now with your belief of what the Bible says or who Jesus is or all of that, I think everybody in this room can agree with this, that life goes by really fast. Students, the first time you're going to figure this out probably won't be until you're sitting in your high school graduation ceremony, and maybe not until then. But what will happen is you'll sit there, and you'll have a valedictorian or the student class president will get up there and talk, and inevitably, they will say this, guys, it seems like just yesterday we were walking into the school as freshmen. And at that point, you'll be like, wow, it does seem like it just happened. Being freshmen and looking forward to senior year, like, this is going to take forever. Looking back, it happens in no time. And it happens a lot more when you get to be like my age, in 30s, 40s, 50s, I'm somewhere in there. And I did something really stupid this week. I Googled, what is considered middle-aged? I should not have done that. I'm gonna be 47 on July 26th, so there's still plenty of shopping days left. And listen, gift cards are fine. I don't think they're impersonal at all. Stupid Google said that middle age is considered 45 to 65. And that's, I'm like, oh my gosh, that means my wife is married to a middle-aged man. That means I'm married to a middle-aged woman. That's gross. No, it's not. It's not gross. She's super hot. My wife is a super hot middle-aged woman. And I don't know where the time went. I don't know. Real quick, I got my buddy Conan out there who's a pastor at C3. They do a lot of talking back. I love going to their, that's right, come on now. Give me an amen or something if you know what I'm talking about when I talk about life going by really fast. Amen. Yeah, man, it goes by fast. I don't know how I got to this point this quickly. No idea. I was just sitting in the same chair Sebastian was when he graduated this year. I was just getting over my fear of roller coasters. I was just yesterday meeting girls at King's Island. No, I wasn't, honey. No, I wasn't. It seems like it. I don't think about it even. I don't know why I even brought it up. Guys, if that is our life, from the time we're born to the time we pass away, if that is our life, how much of that time is our high school career? How much of that time is from your child is born to the time he moves out? How much of that time is falling down the bleachers at church? Are you okay back there? I'm hoping you're okay back there. How much of that time is spent with friends or spent with strangers? You know, you take this quote and you tie it to your past and it can be devastating because we all look at our past and we're like, man, I could have done something. Even if we were great, we still could have done something better. Not worth doing that. But if you take this into your future, it can be motivating. So let me tell you what this message today is not about. It's not about convincing you to say yes to your kids more often. I can't give Sebastian that power. I can see it now. Like, Dad, can I get $100 for some shoes I saw online? I'm like, no. He's like, Dad, you know, at some point, I'm going to ask you for money for the very last time. Oh, crap. It's not going to happen, so don't even try it. What this message is, or what this quote triggered to me, it fanned a flame. It fanned a flame of something that didn't go out, not a flame that went out, but maybe got moved to the back burner. Sometimes they put it on autopilot. But what this quote did to me is it reminded me that I, in all time, want to be the best father I can be. I want to be the best husband I can be. I want to be the best friend I can be. I want to be the best random stranger you meet at Starbucks and strike up a conversation with. I want to be the man God called me to be. And if you notice all those things that I want to be best at, the best I can be, and I hope you're striving for the same thing, all of those things relate because they all involve being with somebody else, being with people. I think to look and to find out, like, what kind of example we need to see, what kind of example we need to follow to be the men and women of God that we're supposed to be, it starts right here. Matthew 1:23, behold, the virgin shall conceive a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel. It's beginning to sound a lot like Christmas. I can't sing. Actually, I think we're closer to the birth of Jesus in the summertime than we are in December, so we should have, I feel like we should have like a summer Christmas as well as, and I'll just throw a date out there, July 26th, we'll plan on it. Plenty of shopping days left. Emmanuel, the example is hidden in this passage, Emmanuel. You shall call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. It's so important that God was with us that he put it in his name. He left his world to be with us in ours, to commune with us, to walk with us, to go through life with us, to be with us. John, a couple weeks ago, did a message that where he talked about God not only being with us, but he's within us. And so it seems like, all right, we got these weeks out of order. But this is actually a great continuation to God being in us, because this is what it should look like when God is within us. The summer stories idea is to find a passage that kind of ties into your summer story, like a Jesus story that kind of ties into your summer story. Well, much like my summer stories, I couldn't find just one. I couldn't find just one summer story where Jesus was with people, because he really lived up to that name. He really did what he was called to do. He was with people. There's way too many to do just one. What about Jesus with his friends, like his disciples? So many great stories I'd love to share with you where he's walking through and telling them and teaching them what it looks like to be the very first Christ followers. One story that really pops out was the washing of the feet, when Jesus washed his disciples' feet. Every time Joel mentions that story, he starts tearing up, because it was a story where Jesus says, I didn't come to be served, I came to serve. And that really gets Joel, and my part, my problem is I'm a little, I don't want to say jaded, because that's not the right word, because it's a powerful story, but I've been through it. Here's what happened. The church down in Grove City asked me one time to come in and play Jesus one Sunday morning. They had heard that I'd played Jesus at the old church that I went to. I'm like, yeah, sure, sounds good. And they said, well, here's what we're going to do. You're going to be Jesus, and we're going to have the 12 disciples with you. And as they walk one at a time down the aisle, we're going to have a narrator talk about their story. I'm like, okay, sounds great. He says, so what's going to happen is when they make their way to the stage to get through the narration, you're going to wash their feet. I'm like, ah. I should have asked beforehand what was going on. It was so gross, guys. It was disgusting. Like the first guy that comes out and puts his feet in there, the water instantly goes murky. Like, I'm like, oh, this is not good. By the third person, there's a Band-Aid floating in the water. And there's, like, you had to break the water tension after, like, the fifth guy. Like, this is disgusting. But I did it. I was in constant prayer, but the prayer was like, please, God, don't let me throw up into this bucket. It was nasty. But Jesus did that for his friends. What about this? Jesus with the woman at the well. He went out of his way to spend time with this woman that society said he probably shouldn't have been seen with. She was a Samaritan. He was Jew. They didn't get along. She wasn't with her husband at the time. He wasn't there, so Jesus shouldn't have been talking to her. And she was living with a guy that wasn't her husband, so all kinds of reasons why Jesus technically shouldn't have been talking to her. But he went out of his way to sit with her and talk to her about living water. What about Jesus with the crowd, feeding the 5,000? Man, that's impressive. Like, we have a patio at our house, and we love to have people come over and hang out on the patio. But every once in a while, Tab's like, hey, we need to cook for people coming over. I'm like, oh, Tab. I know it's manly to grill out, but I'm like, can't we just get a pizza? This is like feeding the 5,000. She's like, there's six people coming over, David. Throw a couple hamburgers. I'm like, come on. So I'm leaving the house, and she's like, where are you going? I'm like, I got to go get food for the feeding of the six. I'm a big wuss. But Jesus loved being with people. Jesus with a blind man. Talk about pouring into somebody's life, completely changing their life, healing people. And then ultimately, Jesus on the cross. Jesus on the cross so that not only was he with us while he walked the earth, but he can be with us now today. So what are all these stories? What do all these stories mean? Are they just an example of what a great guy he was and how he's a bit of a socialite and liked to be around people? I don't think so. Actually, I know that's not the case. Because he follows it up with this. In Matthew 22, the religious leaders are again trying to get him to say something that they disagree with, trying to get him to say something they can use against him. And they ask him, one of the lawyers says, one of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. So we can look at this and be like, okay, yeah, that's cool. Cool. We get it. Yeah, love the Lord your God. That makes sense. Got that. Christian faith 101. But love your neighbor is a close second, and I know it's a close second because he offers it up without being asked. The guy didn't say, hey, what is the greatest commandment? Love your God. Okay, follow-up question. What is the second greatest commandment? It's either eating your vegetables or loving your neighbor. It's one of those two. It's somewhere in there. He offered it up, and he literally says the second is like it. Love the Lord your God. The second like it, love your neighbor as yourself. He said, look, I need you to go love. I need you to go be with people. Because this was about 2 or 3 years before social media and FaceTime. So to love people, you had to go be with them. So he's telling us to go be with people. So now you're thinking, David, come on, okay. So let me get this straight. You're showing us these examples of Jesus being with people. He's with the worthy and the unworthy and the people he should be with and the people that others think he shouldn't be with. And then he tells us this second greatest commandment, which is a lot like the first. Are you telling us that in the grand scheme of things, our lives aren't about us? Yep, that's what I'm telling you. That's what I'm telling you. Hallelujah, we're getting it. And that's not condescending. I need that just as much as you do. Our lives are not about ourselves. Jesus loved others. He wants us to. You know who's getting this right? Our student ministry team. Bryce and Kaylee and Ryan. You heard that. I'm assuming you heard that joy in his voice. Like, yeah, that's their job. Their job is to be student. But you can tell that they love being with the students. When they came back, a couple days after they came back, they sat there in the staff meeting and they told us about this. And you just see joy on their face. You know, when you find something you love to do and you do that for a living, you'll never work a day in your life. They're getting it right. Matt Bowers and David Bailey, my men's small group leaders, they're getting it right. They're pouring into the lives of these men in the small group. Kenny Sipes and Roosevelt Coffee is getting it right. I've gone into Roosevelt so many times and see Kenny out from behind the bar, sitting at a table with somebody, just talking to them. And Kenny knows, Kenny, I know you're out there. Is the Roosevelt about you? God's using the Roosevelt. God's using Kenny. That's about other people. You know who's not super great at it or could get better? Me. Look, I'm great. You put me in front of a group of 500 people on stage, I'm in my element. I love it. You put me in front of 2 or 3 people but hand me a deck of cards, I got this. But if you put me in front of 1 or 2 or 3 people and just tell me to carry on a conversation, it's going to get awkward. I'm just going to say stupid stuff, jokes that don't make any sense to them, that's over their head or just not to their level. It's going to get bad. I can make any situation really awkward. Here's one. I chipped a tooth at the church office a while back and had to get a crown. So when I went to get the crown put in, it was at my dentist, but it wasn't my regular dentist. So this dentist is a 20-something guy, good-looking, young, hip guy, and then his dental hygienist was a good-looking girl. She's 20-something, and just 2 really good-looking, hip people. And I'm like, oh, this is terrible, because I'm going to have to lay there like this, and they're looking up my nose, and there's nothing cool about it. And I'm like, I got to try and be cool. Just try to be cool. It's as awkward as it is. So I'm laying back like this, and he goes, and he's using tweezers to put the crown in. And for some reason, I moved my tongue, which knocked the crown out of the tweezers, and that tooth went right back to the back of my throat. And I jumped up out of that seat. I went like this. I think I smacked her in the face. I knocked tools out of his hand. I stood up, and I go, yeah. like 15 minutes. They're just, they can't do anything. They're just, I'm this far away from that dentist. I'm going, get out. And nothing's working for like 15 minutes. No joke. Finally, it pops out. I'm like, I got it. We're good. I make any situation awkward. I got to get better. I want to talk to the believers in the room, the Christ followers right now. See, one day you're going to stand before God, and I promise you, he is not going to talk about how high you climbed the corporate ladder. He's not going to talk about your high school baseball batting career. He's not going to care that you kept up with the Kardashians. He's going to look at you and he's going to say, you know why I gave you that job? I gave you that job so you could be with hundreds of people that could see me and you, people that needed love. That's why you had that job. All the stuff that came along with it, you're welcome. That wasn't for you. The job wasn't for you. I just gave you that other stuff. You're welcome. But I put you there for those people. See that guy over there? He's here not because you're the CEO of a company. He's here because one day you sat with him at Starbucks and asked him about his family. I gave you that baseball career because I needed you on that bus with that team so they could see a difference in you, a difference they weren't seeing at their homes. That's why you had that baseball career. David, see that guy right over there? He's here because he was with all of you one Sunday when you talked about getting hit on the left kink. He laughed and thought, I've never thought I heard anything like that at church before, and he kept coming back, and now he's here. See, what happens is one day, I believe I'm going to stand before God, and I want him to be proud. I don't want him to say, show me a card trick. He's not going to do that. Hey, show me that card trick that you were doing down there. Tell me another joke, David. Doesn't care. I want him to be proud. I'm reading a book called The Last Arrow. And this book is all about living life and that to truly live, we should be pouring into people's lives or we should be loving others. We should be with people. Erwin McManus is the author. The book's The Last Arrow. Here's a quote from it. There's so many good quotes. Here's one. The tragedy of a life that is never fully lived is not solely the loss of that one life. The tragedy is the endless number of lives that would have been forever changed if we had chosen to live differently. That mist, we're gonna go a little longer here. That mist, if that's life, what comes after is an endless ocean. What we do in that mist matters. Being with others matters. It matters to us, and it matters to those we come in contact with. Go, be with your neighbor. Go love people. Let them see a difference in you. Jesus was with people. We are most like Christ when we're with people. At the end of your mist, will you look back and say, I existed? Or will you say, I lived?